is complete chaos in the background. So I've got to press the live button here, make sure that goes in the right place. And I think we should be broadcasting and live streaming in different places. Oh, why am I hearing myself? Ilya, I think maybe you need to plug something in. Oh, good Lord. We got to stop that. I think, was that through your side, Ilya? Maybe you want to get some headphones or something. Is that something you can do? Yeah, go and grab some headphones. That's totally cool. Okay, everybody, and welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. I hope that shocking sound effect really woke you up. But basically, the importance of always jacking in your headphones when you're getting onto live streaming, because otherwise it becomes totally chaotic. Anyway, welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 89. I'm delighted to bring it to you like we do every Friday. We've got three more shows left. This is the third show before the end of the year. And I'm delighted to say we're actually launching a new mini-series today, which is going to be super interesting because we wanted to really flip the script a little bit and think about a different format to do this type of show. And so the idea for us was really to, hang on, Ilya's back. Ilya, do you want to try the sound again? Let's see what that looks like. Hopefully we don't get terrible sound effect.
Test 1, 2.
Yeah, sounds okay. Yeah, it's okay. Okay, cool. So anyway, as I was saying, we've got a new kind of mini series today, which is going to be a 4-part series all about from the developer's point of view. A lot of us are tech recruiters. Follow my channel, follow the newsletter, are recruiting in tech exclusively, or at least you're recruiting in a company that cares about hiring engineers, but it's a hard thing to do. And we often make mistakes. So the theory that Ilya and I had was, hey, why don't we get a bunch of developers on screen and have them tell us what their opinions are when we have, you know, various recruiting mechanics, recruiting behaviors, outreach, onboarding, assessments, you know, how recruiters behave. Let's put that to the test with the developers themselves. So great opportunity to learn from the community that you want to recruit from. Anyway, I'm also super excited today because Adam Gordon has again been upgraded. I'm doing very good this week because he's not in the seat. It's Ilya Brodsky, CEO of VanHack, who are our sponsors today. So thank you, VanHack, for sponsoring this. And welcome to Ilya. Great to have you on the show, man.
It's a huge pleasure to be here, Hung. I've been a fan of yours and recruiting Brain Food for years now, so it's really an honor to be here.
Okay, can I just say a massive round of applause for Ilya for getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, because I think it's that kind of time in San Francisco. And he promises me that's okay, but I'm pretty certain that's not okay. We're gonna go through this. Anyway, listen, we're excited about today, and it's going to be a fascinating session. But before we dive into it, we always kind of review the newsletter from last week, a couple of topics that we want to just quickly cover and talk about. Ilya, I wonder whether you had the chance to review that. I mean, did you read the newsletter? And if you did, was there anything interesting you want to have a quick chat about?
Yeah, I did. There was two kind of interesting articles that were not related, but I far connected. One was about scaling culture. What was one of the one on Reddit? He said it was hard for him to scale his culture from 20 to 70 people, almost break the company. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was how Amazon hired like 500,000 people this year and now have 1.2 million employees. Yeah. So they're scaling their culture with all these hires. And then this, you know, it's of course harder in the smaller companies, but just interesting how companies that are mature really can go much faster.
You know what? Those two things are really, I mean, firstly, I've just shared the links in the chat stream there. Oh, by the way, folks, and we're multi-streaming here. So Crowdcast, I think everyone can hear us okay there. LinkedIn, if you're there on LinkedIn Live, let me know if the audio is okay there. And Facebook Live, we're also there. Let me know on comments if you can hear me okay. If not, we've got someone in the background to try and plug in the right sort of wires, and hopefully we can get it all going. But those two topics are really interesting. Firstly, number one, I love it when founders talk about recruiting. I love it when non-specialist recruiters talk about it, because you know these people care about their companies, and they've learned through error and mistake you know, what they've learned. And to be prepared to share it, I thought was really interesting. That post was all about why hiring a culture person, quote unquote, might actually be a bad idea. And I really liked that concept because it brought in the idea that culture should be an emergent thing rather than something that you, you know, you hire a culture person, therefore you have culture. Mm-hmm. No, it's basically the operation, the mechanics of your business and how it operates. And of course, Amazon, different story altogether. I'm not sure there's ever been a company that recruits like Amazon. Not in the scale.
The U.S. government during World War II was the other entity that recruited as much.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, they did the Amazon Career Day earlier this year, which should be like one of the signature moments of this year, really. If it wasn't for COVID-19, it probably would be. They had like hundreds of thousands of people in one day, like offers. And you think, that's like a city's worth of people, you know, in certain countries, you know, it's like hiring the entire population of the country. So ridiculous.
Yeah, I think they're just getting started as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Ridiculous scale. I mean, you can see from a, and you know, there's a lot of antitrust type legislation going on in the US right now and concerns about tech companies getting too big and so forth. I'm pretty certain Amazon's going to be slapped or something soon because they are definitely operating at a scale which is above and beyond, you know, any corporate business. But I don't know. From my side, I'm a fan. You know, I like to see this type of experimentation happen with different types of organization. And it shouldn't necessarily have to be that government is the biggest thing at all the time, you know, because sometimes maybe a corporate business actually does do it more effectively. So,
I think from all the big tech companies, Amazon has the least chance of being broken up or having some antitrust action because they're in that broader market of retail and they only have a small percentage of it. Although half of, there's the other argument where half of US e-commerce goes through Amazon. Right, so it really depends how you frame it. I don't want to go too deep into that rabbit hole because there's definitely a lot of accusations about how they treat their workers. But from the tech side of things, at least, I know they treat them well and pay them very well. And it's one of the reasons we started at VanHack is because I can see the Amazon Vancouver office from my office, from my window. They're going to hire, you know, half the engineers in the city here.
No, absolutely. And you know, whenever they do put an office anywhere for tech, they're going to have an impact because it means more people, you know, they're going to draw out tech talent from there. And it should mean that more people want to come in to backfill those jobs as well. So it's a fascinating spot. But anyway, let's talk about the topic at hand. And the topic at hand was actually your idea, I believe, Ilya, which was, you know, let's talk to developers, actually. Let's have an examination of this, sort of the first thing. Recruiter outreach. So that's the topic of today. So folks, we've got four things we want to talk about per episode. This episode is going to be about the messaging that recruiters send to software engineers. Now, you've been a software engineer, you've hired software engineers. In many respects, you've done these different types of activities. What constitutes a good message as far as you're concerned? You know, one that you would send, for instance, you were comfortable with, you said, okay, right, these are the elements that need to be in a message. A developer shouldn't have any problem with it.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different for us at VanHack than maybe for kind of a company itself. Like VanHack, we're a platform to connect developers and employers. And we started off actually as a school to teach developers soft skills, English, resumes, focused on originally just Brazil and then other countries around the world where English is a second language primarily. Mm-hmm. And so the outreach that we would always do was very much offering support and help. So it was mostly positively received. And also when we started telling candidates that there's opportunities for international jobs, a lot of times they didn't believe us. They thought we were too good to be good true and kind of spammers or fraudsters. So for us, it was a lot about giving free valuable content, whether we help you get a job or not, or you buy one of our courses or not. So just creating a lot of videos, webinars, information, just everything that you do hung very well. And then on the other side, proving success cases and showing that what we do works. So we reach out to a developer from a specific country and say, hey, we helped this many people from your country get hired, or we helped this many Java developers get hired, and just making that connection with them, in addition to offering kind of free help, it was very well received.
You know what? This is actually a really interesting angle, because there is an international element to this as well, isn't it? Like how responsive developers are to outreach oftentimes can be, there's a geographical component to that. And, you know, most of the people that have problems with it tend to already be situated in, if you like, tier one tech cities, English language friendly type cities, you know, the New York, San Francisco's, the London's, the Berlin's, and they get inundated with messaging, therefore inevitably they get a bit more hostile to it. But if they were situated in a different part of the world where, you know, these opportunities would actually be really, really interesting, then actually a messaging would be met very differently. So there's a geographical component to this as well. Okay, cool. Let's go on, Eli, you about to say something?
I was going to say, I completely agree. Last year, we did a recruiting fair with the German company, and we focused on a lot on candidates in the EU region. And it was super surprising for us to how negatively we were received. We were sending almost the same message, and we got a lot of F off, you know, ranging all the way from that to, you know, thank you very much. I'm currently happy with my employer, but mostly negative replies. Yeah.
All right. So, it's a lesson to the folks here. Number one, sort of the message content is important. And we're going to be talking about message content in a bit. But it's also about the audience that you're sending it to and what their sensitivity is to opportunity. A friend of mine calls it, is this person hire ready? In other words, are they kind of switched on to the idea of potentially moving on? And if so, actually the message would be right. Doesn't almost matter what the content is. The timing is right. Whereas if you're you're a developer in a high demand type city, you're in Berlin, let's say, you get inundated with opportunities, yet another message is not going to be welcome, irrespective of almost what is being written in there. So that's a very important point. But anyway, let's bring on some of our developer friends and see what they've got to say about it. Don't worry about it. By the way, I've sent millions of emails myself back in my day, Ilya. I know totally the F off experience. That's part of the reason why I set up Brain Food. Actually, I thought that, you know what, it makes more sense to create an opt-in only type sort of approach. Okay, so let me just bring these folks on board. Andy, good to see you, man.
Yeah, you too.
I knew this would happen. You know, I always tell my guests, hey, listen, put in your full name, please. Because if you don't, I actually can't ID you. And Jessica didn't do that. Now there's four Jessicas in the selection panel. I'm just going to choose a Jessica, and it better be you. If it isn't, just come on screen anyway. That's fine. Okay, cool. So for the people who don't know you, welcome firstly, Andy and Laura. But let's introduce ourselves. Andy, do you want to quickly introduce who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm an engineer at Monzo Bank. So if you don't know what Monzo Bank is, we are a digital only bank in the UK. That's kind of what we do, I suppose. I've had roles all the way from junior engineer to CTO, so I kind of be on both sides of the engineering hiring, table.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And Laura, can you quickly introduce yourself, like who you are, what it is you do?
Of course. So hello from Amsterdam. I'm Laura, a software developer for a long time, maybe 7 years. And I'm working for Frontman, which is a consultancy company here in the Netherlands. That's it.
Okay, fantastic, Laura. Great to have you on the show. And this is Jessica. I think it's the wrong Jessica, but in my view, that's still the right Jessica. Is it the right Jessica? I can't even remember. Is it Jessica Green?
Yes.
Jessica, good to see you. Good Lord.
forgot me already.
Like, you know what? I feel really bad now because, you know, there's so many people I've been speaking to the last couple of weeks, but I completely mislaid exactly who it is that I was speaking to. Anyway,
we found each other.
We did indeed. Can you quickly introduce yourself, Jessica, who you are, what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm a back-end focused developer at Ecosia, the search engine that plants trees. I'm a career changer. I'm relatively new to tech. I'm celebrating just over 2 years or 2.5 years. I'm also a community organizer and involved in a lot of the communities here in Berlin.
Okay, fantastic. So we've got representation from UK, Amsterdam and Berlin, actually probably three of the big cities in the tech scene in Europe, and probably, you know, very competitive spaces. People are competing for the talent there. Very quickly, for the people who've just joined us, can you give us like just a one-liner in terms of your general experience of recruitment messaging? Let's go with you first, Laurie. Do you want to just tell us how you feel about it? What's your first take?
Yeah, I don't mind. I like talking to people, so I always, you know, thinking about an opportunity to explore what's the market and just to see what there is out there. But you know, not always I'm in the same mood. So depending really a lot what's going on in my life or at my work. But again, generally speaking, I'm fine with it. I actually kind of enjoy it.
That's really good to hear and really good to know, because I think we've got like maybe 300 people watching this, most of them going to be developers, recruiters. And I've already told them, hey, listen, this is going to be a tough love session for you. So it's really, really good that you're able to say something like that, which, you know, it's good to hear the different sort of attitudes people might have, because, you know, we can't treat everything as a monolithic block. So that's fantastic. How about you, Jess? What are your thoughts, you know, when you're thinking about things like, okay, recruiters message me, what's your feeling when you think about that?
A real range. I think when it's not well done, it can be pretty dreadful. But when it's well done, it can be incredibly enjoyable and rewarding, even if I'm not looking for a position.
That's really interesting. So there's a way to do it, essentially. And we'll explore that in a moment. Andy, very quickly to you, general thoughts on this. Recruiter messaging, is it, you know, how do you feel about it?
I guess I'm probably maybe a recruiter's worst nightmare. I think the messages come into my inbox and it's like a black hole. I never get back to anyone. No, that's me. I guess at the same time, though, there's definitely a mixed bag of messages.
Yeah. That's interesting as well, because inbox strategy is also something we need to think about, right? Because when Ilya mentioned the idea that you were getting some people telling you to F off, that is actually an inbox strategy. That's basically a person trying to sort of control their inbox experience by actively deterring what they consider to be an unwelcome intrusion into their software. Whereas Andy's approach is simply to ignore it. By the way, very similar to mine. It's like, yeah, inbox infinity, go for it. You don't need to respond, that's fine. But other people who have the inbox zero mentality, you know, when they lock it in that way, anything that comes into it is actually work. So this is why the resentment factor can go up, because you're asking this person to do work. Okay, really good to see this spread of attitudes here. Let's have a think about, I want to explore your point first, Jess, when you said that, you know, when it was done well, there was like, there's a way to do it well. Can you tell us exactly what sort of caused you to think that? And have you kind of sort of tried to define it in terms of what a good message really is?
That's a tricky question. It'd be a great answer to give everyone, right? I think a lot of it's to do with tone. And I think also what Ilya said earlier about supportiveness within the message is something, especially for me, maybe as someone who's new in the industry, is like really stands out for me. I think if I have the sense that it's a genuine kind of, let's see if this is interesting for you, if we can support one another, and also that it's a consistent message, I guess. I receive a lot of mails that are very conflicting, even in the message they have. So They will name technologies that I do not have on my profile, or they'll name seniority where I have clearly stated that I'm more new in the industry. And these things are really instantly kind of a turn off, so to say. And I engage less when this is the case.
Okay, so there's a loads of interesting bits of commentary there. By the way, everyone, if you've got any ideas, please feel free to pop in with this. But just to go with what Jess said, there's some basic errors, right? So if the person literally has not done the research and they're hiring for, I don't know, a Perl programmer for whatever reason, and they kind of love Perl, by the way. But let's say they're hiring for a Perl person, and you know they haven't read your profile, they don't understand, even paid attention to your career track. That's probably just a mass message, right? I mean, the software that allows recruiters to just send messages at scale, and I think a great deal of the bad messaging that people receive is actually this scaled up messaging that isn't at all targeted. The issue of tone was really interesting, Jess. What do you mean by that? I'm immediately assuming that you might be referring to like overly pushy email or something of that type, but I don't want to prejudice your answer there. I mean, what do you mean by tone?
In my concrete example, I'm not particularly looking for work, and I have that stated. But when someone approaches me and says, I know that you might not be looking right now, but I would like to kind of talk to you about the company I'm working at, that piques my interest a lot more than just a laundry list of skills that they're looking for an open position.
All right. So that's a really good way to think about it. So we have to understand that the candidate psychology, so quote unquote candidate, because this person isn't even a candidate yet. If you assume that they are a job seeker, that might inform you the way in which you write this email. And that's often a mistake because you don't know whether that person is a job seeker or not. So if you've identified this person, I don't know, wherever they found your details, you can't walk around thinking that has to mean this person is so-called actively looking or even potentially interested, because that the information they're drawing from may not indicate that. You know, they may have got your email from your website, for instance, which may not state these things, or they may have got it from some other profile that simply doesn't have this information, so they can't make that presumption of interest. Okay.
And sometimes developers are very bad at updating, myself included, updating the profile, you know, if I'm not currently looking.
Yeah, well, I think we all are, to be honest with you. I mean, as a platform builder and sort of Ilya would confirm this, anybody's built any kind of talent directory platform, the biggest problem is not the accuracy of the data, it's the currency of it. Because as soon as you log it in, it's going to be out of date. We haven't found a way to dynamically track this. Especially when you're looking at job search sentiment, for instance. You know, we often think we're upset and we want to move on or whatever long before we actually articulate that anywhere. By the time we've actually written it and published it, we're already halfway out the door. So there's a lot of information that's really locked in here, and I don't think we'll ever get to the absolute currency side of it until, you know, we get microchips from, you know, these injections that we're getting. I don't know. So, okay, let's have a look at some really good points there, Jess. I want to go to Laura with this. So tone is important. But is that the real reason, Laura? Because you're mentioning, hey, this person's offering opportunities. You know, maybe the manner in which they're doing so isn't that interesting. But at least, you know, I can say no. It's just that let's have a chat. I mean, how do you approach this? Is the tone important, I guess, is the question I want to ask you, Laura.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first, let's say, thing that I keep in mind, because as Jess said, maybe I'm not interested. And if you just have some background information on me, then I feel a bit more in the context. So I know that after that message, there might be some kind of continuation or discussion on it. But also something that I really value is the accuracy of the job description. Because sometimes I've seen some messages that they are actually description on a whole IT department instead of one single person. And those kind of messages, I don't even bother to really check on it. I'm just saying, no, I'm not interested. Even if it might be interesting, just needed a bit more of refinement on the job itself.
Okay, so basically the detail on the job is important.
At least to me.
For your case. Yes. When you say they're just referring to a department, can you kind of explain to me what you mean exactly by that, Laura? I think I get it, but I don't want to presume again.
No, absolutely. So maybe some information. I'm working with JavaScript and I'm full stack. And that means that I often have to work with different framework. I don't know, TypeScript, Node.js, and then there is Angular, React, anything. But then on top of that, sometimes you also have to do your own pipeline, where to deploy the code and everything, which it's a lot of buzzword, like AWS, Jenkins, and then you have pipeline and like a bunch of buzzword that they sounds really appealing. But when you look in reality, it's really, really, really difficult to find someone who is very proficient in all of the stack.
Yeah. I want to bring Ilya in this a little bit as well. I mean, because this is a lot about the education level of the recruiter, I would say, in many regards, because the industry in recruiting, there's like very little barrier to entry to the industry. In fact, zero, right? I mean, we could finish this call today and the five of us on screen could set up some sort of company and we could start trading as a recruitment company straight away. That is it. And I think there's no way a person is going to be able to distinguish between those companies because everyone's just sending an email, right? That's your first contact. Like, how do you know this is a credible business? And whenever you have an attractive recruiting market, which is typically candidate short market, this is where companies will be prepared to pay a fee for candidates. That's when you get a lot of companies that kind of switch to this particular track and decide, right, how do we quickly recruit developers? How do we figure out how to recruit developers? Oh, it's like this. And they'll just, you know, with very little degree of experience or information, start interacting with candidates. I mean, my experience, just to give you an example, when I was a junior recruiter, like first day, I was like thrown onto the phones. It was like, get on the phone. I said, what? You want me to speak to people? I just walked into the door and I know nothing about this job or the job I'm recruiting for. And you want me to speak to people? And it was like that. That was the career. And I think that still is the case. And I wonder whether the people who are watching this, I think most of my audience tends to be in recruiting. I wonder whether you could quickly comment to say whether, is that still the case? By the way, this is 20 years ago. So this is like, for me, this is now ancient history. But I wonder whether the recruitment practices have changed at all. Did you make your first contact with a candidate on the day one of your job? Were you trained? Were you given like a day's worth of training before you are unleashed onto the market? I'd love to hear what the audience would say. Please put a comment in whatever channel you're at. I want to hear about this. Okay, this is all very interesting. Andy, let me go over to you with this because you're a person that's been a candidate that ignores email. We know this on that side. That's fine. I think you might have ignored a fair few of mine back in the day, actually. You've also been like a CTO, engineering lead, and so you've hired people also. And have you ever taken part in like outreaching to people from the candidate side? Or was your experience in recruiting always a case your candidates came in and you're able to interact with them as, you know, in that way? Or did you sort of send the outreach stuff? Has that ever been a part of your experience?
Yeah, I guess I've done both. I think I've probably had more experience of having, CVs land on my desk, I suppose, rather than like a consistent history of reaching out. But yeah, I've done both. Yeah.
So tell me about that. You're doing like an email outreach. Like, how did you do this?
Yeah, I think that. So there's, there were sort of two approaches that we took. So we had some roles to fill. First, we needed to advertise that we have some roles to fill. And I think that we needed to get that out quickly. So I think we were looking at that as a low effort, let's broadcast this message effectively. So that was quite a like a low investment, and we expected quite a low, I suppose, response rate for that. That made loads of sense. And I think for some specific cases where we'd found, you know, so you're searching LinkedIn or whatever it is, we found like what we thought were the perfect candidate for the type of role that we needed. And that's where we'd probably spend more time kind of investing and looking at their profile. And that was kind of like a second or third maybe wave of reach out, I suppose. So it's kind of the low effort on our part, and then we expected a low effort back, and then a higher investment for the third or second wave. And we hoped that we'd get a higher level of engagement back.
I want to focus on the second part, because this is a very classic recruiting behavior. This is why a lot of ads just get chucked out as well, by the way. If any developers are watching this, the reason why a lot of the ad content seems to be like oftentimes disconnected to the job or disconnected to the employer is because, oh, recruiter's just going to shove something out there because it's low cost to do. Oftentimes you've got a free slot or something like this. Effort is low. And there's no penalty for getting it wrong. So there's a huge amount of misalignment in the market, whereby bad behavior oftentimes is not penalized. So there's almost a why not type attitude to it, because you might get something from this one bit of action that costs you very little effort. But
I guess the downside of it, though, is that then say you do this mass marketing and you hit somebody who might have been in your cohort of people who are the perfect candidate, their first interaction with you is that low effort kind of broadcast. And that's really, I suppose, disappointing, I suppose, to start with.
Yeah, and deleterious. It's one of those things that is damaging to your brand. I had a chat with, I'll try and get Sasha on a bit later, but she was referring exactly to this situation where she basically had, I'll let her tell the story, but to cut a long story short, she had a bad experience, and like she had a persistent negative attitude to that brand, even like years afterwards. And it was like a different recruiter by the time, a different bunch of people, even a different business in effect. But because of that one bad experience, you have this persistent brand damage, which obviously would make it very difficult for that company to recruit her. But obviously it might make it difficult for the company to recruit anybody else that interacted with Sasha, because she would say these things about this company. So it's a very, very damaging thing to do the lazy stuff. But it's understandable why the lazy stuff happens, because there's no direct penalty to the person doing it. Okay, before I let you guys go, quick one for you, Andy. I want to talk about how you write the damn email, man. I mean, in terms of like putting together the email first contact, what is a good email that you wrote to a developer and you thought, okay, this is probably the sort of thing we need to start. I will send it again in future.
I guess without going into specifics, it's... the things that I try to do are kind of highlight the important things first and keep it clear and concise and honest, I suppose. I don't go with a big blurb around all of the benefits and all of the, you know, remote working policies and all that sort of stuff. It's just, this is what we're looking for. This is why we think that, you know, you're a perfect fit for us. And this is why, this is, I suppose, after that, why we think you should reach out to us to continue that conversation. I think that's kind of the message. It's not really, this is all of the information you need to make a complete decision. It's like we know it's the start of a conversation. So I try to keep it clear and concise.
Right. I love the fact people are nodding on this. And Jess, I think you're absolutely right on it's not, you don't sell everything up front, do you? The worst thing you can do is shove all the information into email one and then think, right, this person needs to make a yes, no decision on this. Otherwise, you know, that's pointless. No, it's the start of a relationship. And I think when, you know, you're referring to things like tone, Jess, I suspect that's also about, hey, this person's interested in the relationship rather than, you know, can I just quickly transact in some way? So that's a really important lesson, folks. Basically, understand that your first contact is the start of a long relationship that may end up in a recruitment situation. It may not, but that's also okay. The point is you've started that interaction and you want to just get that interaction going forward. So no big sell. It's about paying a bit of attention. And Andy, you said something really important at the end, which I want to just sit on a little bit longer, which is that you put the responsibility or the ownership of the next step to the back to the person you emailed, right? So it's like you said, if you want to explore further, then get back to me, something of that type.
Yeah, I think I think to expect that response back, though, I think you have to show some upfront investment if that's what you hope for. I think to if I'm receiving an email and someone wants a response back from me, I would like to see that they had spent the time to make sure that I was actually the candidate that they were looking for, and that there is actually some benefit for me working for that company or whatever it is. I don't think that you could expect the candidate to effectively make the first step to invest in that case.
Right. So there's we're talking about thermodynamics here, really, aren't we? Sort of energy in, energy out kind of thing. In the sense that if you want the candidate to go and do X, Y, and Z, you actually have needed to have done A, B, C in advance of that. Like to Laura's point, having, you know, be accurate to, you know, the job description, go further than just say, hey, we're on this stack, you know, talk about the job itself. Or to your point, Jess, you know, spend a bit of time on this, you know, trying to develop the relationship. That's energy in. You can't just template out something and expect it to work every time. Having talked about templates, though, I'm about to bring on Alla Pavlova, who is the queen of email templates. And Alla is actually going to come on and have a chat with us and even share some of the recruiting and email techniques that she's used. And what I want us to all do is to have a look at these messages and see how they sit, how they feel if you received it. Now, you three, because there's a limit to the amount of people I can get on screen at any one time, I'm going to knock you off now and possibly bring you back later on, if that's okay. And then we're going to cycle in and out as we go. But thank you so much for giving your wisdom, Laura, Jessica, and Andy. Stay with us. We'll bring you back later on in the show. Interesting chat, wasn't it? It's always interesting to talk. I mean, you talk to developers all the time, yeah. Ilya. So that is, but for me, this is actually really refreshing because it's been a long time since my focus was the developer marketplace. Of course, during the workshop era, I was doing the same as you, talking to developers more than anybody. But it's reminded me actually that I miss a lot of those conversations. Anyway, here's Alla Pavlova. Alla, how are you doing?
I'm actually confused with the title that you gave me, Queen of Reach Out. So if I reach out to the candidate.
I don't think I quite said Queen of Reach Outs. That might be misinterpreted. Queen of Outreach, I think.
Templates, no. Yes. Queen of Templates.
On the templates. But Alla, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, like who you are, what it is you do?
Yes, I'm an interim technical recruiter right now at Miro, and I also build in technical communities of developers for Slack here in Amsterdam. Amazing. And I mean, reach out, it's something that you just work every day, deal with it every day, and I better tested it a lot, and happy to share. I'm kind of gonna launder my outreaches, and I want you to critique it. I want you to really give me a true feedback, because these are the real reach outs that I'm making.
Right, this is amazing. Thank you very much, Alla, by the way, for being so transparent with actually sharing your like operating data here. This is not like fake. This is the stuff you're going to send out. So this is really interesting. But I wanted to bring you in because we heard some really interesting commentary from Laura, Andy, and Jess just now. About you know how it, you know, we're going to distill that, lots of things that we know, you know, about energy in, energy out, about selling too hard at the first time, about, you know, paying a bit of research and time into it. All of that's really good, but let's look at it from a recruiter's point of view now, because we've also got this job to do and we have to sometimes do it in a more carbon copy way, but can we do it in a sophisticated way? So tell me about your process of testing first, Laura, before we show what the copy looks like.
So the testing process is that every time when I send a reach out, I use the Mixmax for control if that was opened and if I get the reply. I use it for only these purposes, not to bother the candidates, but just for myself, just to keep the statistics, right? I create the sequences and I send the first message. I see if there's it was open. So I actually decide if I'm going to send the second one, because sometimes, you know, you can see the person never opened your reach out. it's in the second reach out. So you should just stop, like, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm not a spammer, right? So I'm trying to get it to the right person. So I A/B tested with my colleagues inside in the company. So I always share my reach out with the hiring manager. I ask them to criticize it because, like, hey, am I putting enough about the stack? Am I putting enough about challenge about the role? Because one of the things before I open the role, I want to know why we need to hire the person and what is exciting about this role. Because, yeah, if I'm going to hire, so I'm going to propose something interesting. And so then I tested with the candidates, and every time if the source candidate, like, you know, this is the beauty, this is the what it drives me when the candidate that I reach out and he or she responded, and then they have the first conversation, I always ask, hey, how do you find my reach out? So is it something that's, do you have any questions? Do you like it? Can I do it differently? And I do that all the time.
That's really good. That's really good. Martin, the tracking is mix match or something.
Mix max.
Yeah, someone share the thing there. Ala, I really like the what you've just said there, particularly about the A/B testing internally. So you don't just create this email and push it to the market and just shove it out there. Let's test it to the people that would otherwise receive these messages, which are technical people working within the business. So that's a really good tip. To deploy. Secondly, you're talking about this the sequencing. It sounds like you're not doing a fully automated like a drip campaign, which, by the way, I'm not a big fan of drip campaigns generally, but you're saying you push a first email out, track the responses, and then if there's no response or there's no open, you think about whether you send a second email or you do something else. At what point do you decide you're going to stop? Is it after the second one, or do you keep going? I mean, what is the right number at which point, you know, you stop being sort of motivated and you turn into a spammer?
Exactly. So I think recruiters and developers will have different opinion about that, answering this question. And I would say I would stop after the third. After the third email, I will never send anything else because I would really assume that it is done. And if I saw that the person never opened it, I can try on LinkedIn. I can try through other channels. But if I saw that the person opened all of my emails but never responded, I should just, you know, probably work on my reach out, or probably it's really not interesting. So.
All right, this is really good. Ilya, I don't know, you're nodding a lot here, but I think this is a really good process, isn't it? Because the first thing to think about is the open. Like, if the person hasn't opened it, there's a good chance they've never seen it. So potentially you can send more messages there because it would still be, in effect, the first message. It may just be email filters filtered it out somewhere and it's in promotions or it's in a different tab. And actually, it's a fresh contact. So there's further investigation there. However, if there's an open and a no response, you have a different posture because it could be this person is starting to get annoyed in some way, or maybe they haven't found the time to respond. That's also a factor.
Yeah.
Sometimes you start an email response, you don't get back or whatever. So, but if it's persistent, then maybe you work on the copy to make it easy for that response to happen. You know, one of the techniques is actually if you're asking for like if your style of messaging actually encourages an overly long response, then your response rate should go down. It's like you need to find a quick way to get them a yes, no, or get them an interested something or other, right? Okay, cool.
Yeah, just on that, I feel like a lot of times when we're following up with candidates, we always try and be very how do you say, like, apologetic, empathetic, sorry to be bothering you, I hope it's okay, don't mean to, you know, make you angry or something like this, just very, like, soft. I think that really helps. Even if it's a no, they'll I think they'll be much more receptive.
Have you A/B tested that, Ilya?
We haven't actually. So the data, that, I don't have the data. Like, I'm excited for that.
I can say about it.
Go on.
I actually tested the follow-up. So the follow-up in itself, just to have an even after you send the first message, and then when you send this, the first follow-up, it increases the response rate for 73%. And when it's, you send the third one, because more people probably become pissed off, so that's it's actually almost 89% of the response rate. So the follow-ups are always increasing it significantly. But I would say I also used humor, like assuming that someone haven't seen it, or like, you know, stop you from the assumption that you're not interested, so please let me know. I really like, you know, that's like trying mm-hmm. to be also polite, because yes. yeah, I just I respect the privacy. Actually, when you do the email campaigns, I hate to do the email campaigns, I don't do them, so I really take the small group, like 30-50 people, run this, reach out, and then change it if needed. But most of the people right now, I think, wonder where do you get my email? And this is the thing that I actually started to add to my reach out as well, where I found the person contact. Yes, yeah. Because they feel like, yeah, it's inappropriate, it's private. So people become a little bit sensitive about it.
Really interesting. Two things there. Ilya, I'm going to dispute your apologetic approach, because I don't think you should lead with that. I don't think you should apologize for emailing anybody. But this is my... Yeah.
It's apologize. Yeah, sorry. It's not the first one. It's the follow-up.
Okay.
I get it. And it's very much like, if this is bothering you, if this is not relevant, okay. You know, apologize in advance. But yeah, as Phil said as well in the comments, we're not sorry, because we are trying to change people's lives. Like, we're going out and yeah. sending emails to candidates on LinkedIn messaging candidates that after we get a lot of people saying, thank you, you know, now I get to live in Amsterdam or Berlin or Toronto. I'm so super excited. Thank you. You know, you get a 100% increase in salary. That's exciting. So people are very like grateful, but I mean, there are people, other people who just, it's not the right time. So
I think you're right. I mean, I know very little about followers, cause I'm too shy. You know, back in the, seriously, I was like totally happy to send the first one.
A recruiter was too shy. I don't believe it.
Seriously. I wouldn't say the worst type, but I was basically, if the first time is no, I'm kind of moving on. And you could do it that way. You could simply find more people, right? But I realize now that what this is doing is, firstly, I'm missing talent. And secondly, I may actually be contributing to more messaging out there, unnecessary messaging out there in the marketplace. Because if it takes me 100 emails to get to one conversation, where Alice, you know, if it takes 100 contacts to get to one conversation, where if you guys got a more sophisticated follow-up approach, you might be contacting 50 people to get to that same number of conversations. So anyway, listen, Ala, are you prepared to show us some email? I want to see this. So let's have a look at a couple of templates. If you could tell us your thinking behind it and how you structured it, and then we'll see what people think of it. I think you can share screen. I'll focus it so me and Ilya disappear off.
Okay, so let me try to share the screen. That's this one. So let's see. Let me know if you can see the slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll focus this as well. Yeah, you got it. Oh shit! Oh, sorry.
It was better before.
I know, it's better when I don't do anything. I get it. Hands free.
So let me know if you can see now.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually start with distraction. I just wanted to give a little bit of comments just very quickly. Every reach out that I'm doing, and that proved to be quite successful, has why I reach out to this particular person. I will always mention something from the tech experience, but not only, because that could be very obvious. I will dive deeper, like look at the hobbies, but not too creepy as well. So you have to be very careful all the time. And there should be explanation why this role specifically, and it also should match to the person plans. Of course, not every profile is updated, but you can make some assumptions. Just making assumptions is not making you look really bad. I felt it's an opposite. And maximum rule that I have is the follow-ups at 3 times, as we discussed. And it's one of the things that I also, it's a rule for me, it's to read the summary. I actually will never go and contact the person who says, please, no recruiters, please don't contact me, I'm not looking for a job. I will not agree, contact anyway, just for asking maybe something, you know. And respecting the privacy for me is also very important, to give the idea, how did I find the candidate profile? So that's I will always do. So I'm going to show you first the reach out. As example number one, on the next slide, you will see actually the response rates. That was recently tested before this show. So I spent 2 weeks asking 100 developers, different developers, mostly web developers, to look and let me know how do they feel about this reach out. So I also tested it on the senior product managers. So one of these reach out, it looks big. So I would say I can already hear some of the comments, but the structure is always like that. So I put what I'm doing, who I am, the company, and then I go to the subject where I have found this profile. So I can mention about the email address, and I slightly go to the explanation about the company. So it really depends on the role, and it really depends on who you're looking for. So I tend to add more text for the product managers and a little bit less text to the developers. I always add this, what is that for you, explaining, so you've been creating these things, enabling these things, and more specific, not blah, 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 just really launching the game websites, broadcasting, etc. So it's quite specific. So the person who will read, my goal is the person who is going to read it, and they'll understand what is the job about. And so I give the action points so that if you're interested, so we can discuss it further. And this actually reach out got like 95% response, very high.
That's massively high.
It's massively high, but also, you know, the funny part is, like, for example, if you look at this reach out, so this is another example. So I start already with the, like, a company going through the details, what we are doing right now, how million users we have, what are the locations, and I go deeper in the tech stack. So I give the identification exactly who we are looking for and what we are using for, because some of the candidates, okay, so I use AWS for that on this part. So when I'm going to be this, you know, sometimes you don't get the response because the person is a little bit like annoyed that he or she needs to do some extra homework to get the information out of you. So I found it very, you know, helpful to give this heads up to the person which part of something this that's going to be. And so this example, for example, this had only 57% of the response rate. Even I tried to make it personal, added the stack, and I assume, and I received this comment a lot, it's too long. So I would wonder what would be the response from other people who are watching it right now. I'm actually a little bit nervous, but happy to see it's important. And another example that I briefly, it's the last one I would like to make in respect of, I really would like to get us to the feedback part. This is about the also the infrastructure team. So I put it a little bit like why I decided to reach out to this person, what this person is going to do, why we would like you to choose best tools, etc. Some freedom linked to the job, and the most important that you're going to influence on the product. So it sounds a little bit too little probably at the first glance, but yeah, so this response gets me with the developers to the 76% response rate. So this is very briefly, and coming back to, you know, the end goal is to find the right person for the right job, right? So I sometimes think that I'm overcomplicating things as well, just to trying to through all the information in one email, and it's going to be also a little bit overwhelming. And depending on what is my goal, I try to adapt. So sometimes I even want to reach out, changing based on the personal profile. And I think the personal part is the most important. So that's super, super briefly.
That's great, Ala. Thank you so much for sharing that information, and also for kind of doing the research. And I know you do this anyway, but I suspect, you know, when I spoke to you about this show, you kind of put extra effort actually to make sure that this information was going to be shared today. So thank you very much for that. Super interesting. What did I get from it? You know, I got that, obviously, it's possible to get an astonishingly high response rate. I mean, 95% is massively high. I think, now I would call 50% a win, to be honest with you. But obviously, I've got like a sub-ala standards here. You know, it's like 95% is massively high. And I wonder whether it's got something to do with this a comment that Andy mentioned earlier, which was, you know, you've got to demonstrate some effort. And the first email to me looked like it had a lot of effort in there. You mentioned, you know, more sophistication, just listing the keywords that you've got to explain for what is this technology going to use for, like where does it fit into the system? And that type of information can only come from having a great relationship with the tech team. So you're educated enough to be able to have this level of dialogue with the receiver of it. Quick question for you, Al, did you get any negative, like fuck off type messaging? I mean, because Ilya and I are very familiar with this type of response, but I wonder whether the effort you put in can sometimes also meet with like a hostile response, I would say.
That's why I always add this human part, because this is how you learn. But before I get to this response rate, so I experienced some of the negative responses as well. Of course, I mixed the name. When I noticed it, I completely straight away ran to the person, apologize and saying, hey, definitely you're not Peter, so you're Jan. And I really was thinking about another person when I was writing it. So it's a fair mistake, but because it was made so many times, we just don't have a room for the mistakes anymore. And yeah. I sent it to the person and I said, hey, my name was mixed so many times. If I get €1 for every time it happens, I will probably be very rich and just need to drop, like, you know, the job and et cetera. And the person responded to me with humor, say, hey, okay, so that's fun. Thank you. I'm not interested, but let's keep in touch. Yeah. So that was like I received the negative responses as well. Like I mixed the technical stack, and it's not because, like, you know, these things like a difference between Java and JavaScript. I think everyone already know that very well. And sometimes on a much high level, so you can really make mistakes, fair mistakes in terms of the stack, etc. Because some time ago, you know, TypeScript was something like people use only on the back end, and now it's like, you know, it's something that is a front end. Yeah, so that you have to be careful.
That's also true. It's very hard to stay current with technology. And in fact, if you step away from it for 3-6 months or whatever, you're already working with out of date stuff. And this is true even for developers, right? I mean, they're constantly needing to update because that moves fast, irrespective of whether you care about it or not. So it's very, very difficult to stay current on it. I wonder whether there's some sort of service that might help us in this way. You know, to keep us fresh and up to date with latest versions, what they do, etc. Might be actually quite a cool tool to have. Anyway, cool. Ala, I've just noticed the time. We're flying through this session, and I want to bring on some more developers because we've got more people to bring on. So stay with us, Ala. I might be able to bring you back on in a second, but thank you so much for sharing this information. I'm going to try and bring these other developers on and get their views on this, because hopefully they've been paying attention and have seen some of that that emailing that you put out. Great to have you, Ala. I'll speak to you in a bit.
Thank you.
That was great, huh?
Yeah, very, very interesting. I can't believe 95% response rate. I wanted to ask her if it's 95% positive or just 95% reply.
I would accept at that rate, if it matched to me, I would say
that was half positive or third positive.
Yeah, I would say that was totally okay. Who else do we need to bring on? I totally forgot. Alexandra. Ming's just been invited. There isn't Alexandra here. I'm going to invite her. I think that's her. This might be Ala's colleague, actually, who works on the developer side for Miro. And who is the lady in India, Ilya? Can you remember the name of that lady?
Yeah, Kritika. She sent me a WhatsApp. She's traveling in Dubai to get her biometrics for her visa because she's actually about to relocate herself. So she wasn't able to
join us.
She'll be here next week.
No worries. So we've got Mingho and Alexandra, I think, that might be joining us. Oh, hello. Is that Alexandra?
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And is that Mingho?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hey. Yes, we can hear you. Great. Okay.
That's great.
Thank you for joining the show, you two. Very quickly, can you introduce yourself to the audience, like who you are and what do you do? Alexandra, you go first.
Sure. Hi, I'm Alexandra. I work as a front-end engineer at Miro in Amsterdam. and I've been working in the industry for about 7 years or so, always here in Amsterdam, which is a very overloaded market, I would say.
Absolutely. Loads of technology businesses, loads of software developers, loads of recruiters for those people. So welcome to the show, Alexandra. And Minho, can you quickly introduce yourself, like who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm Minho. I'm from Taiwan. I'm now working in Amsterdam as well. I've been working as a software developer for like around 10 years and now working for Lepaya, which is the, we see ourselves as a training as a service company. So, and my experience, yeah, I worked for all kinds of startups before, like in different stages, different scales, and also different industries. That's me.
Yeah, great to have you on the show, Minho. So let's I'm not sure whether you've watched or sort of any of the dialogue so far, but we've had some really interesting conversation about how recruiters do messaging, and how we've explored how to do it badly. Alice just come on to talk about, hey, here's my approach. I just wanted to touch on a few things that Ala brought up, particularly on the frequency, or should we say the sequencing of email. Like for instance, she was saying, hey, I want to send the developer 3 emails as maximum. So in other words, first email, no response, second email, no response, third email, stop. Now, what are your thoughts on that? In the US, they're taught it's 8 emails, right? You got to do 8 before 8 or someone comes back with an F off. So they're much harder, I think, in the US than we are in Europe. But still, I'd be very interested to know what your thoughts are on this. What point is it okay? What point does it not become okay? Is it anything to do with the number of these emails? We'll go to you first, Alexandra.
Yeah, I do think 8 emails is a bit too much, at least for the European market. I've had this experience only once, and yeah, it felt a bit like stalking in the end. I do understand it from a recruiter point of view as well, because, well, if someone doesn't reply, then it's also not a no yet, so possibly you can try again. But usually for me, at least, I just can't get to reply to all the emails because it's just inbox overload in LinkedIn. And yeah, I would say 3 is a fair number in my personal experience. But of course, it's I don't want to generalize in any way. If a job or a recruiter didn't get my attention from the first email, the chances of me going through the second one and really giving it another chance is not that big, because there was probably already something that made me not consider that.
Yeah. How about you, Minho? 3 is fair, would you say?
Yeah, I totally agree with Alexandra, and so for me it depends on if I'm looking for a job right now or I'm not, but I do sometimes miss the email or miss the message, so I think 2 to 3 is good. And also I think it also depends on if I'm currently working or not, because if I'm still working, if I still have a job, then I still have to work, and probably I won't spend too much time on getting the reading email. But if I'm like 20, probably like.
Oh, we're having some Wi-Fi difficulties, but Mio, hopefully we can get you back. But I think we kind of get where it was coming. She actually mentioned a really interesting point, which was where the person is in terms of the work status. Because obviously if you're working, you're busy, you've got other things on the go, of course most messaging is going to be irrelevant to you because of your work mode, but that can switch. You can end up looking for work, in which case you know, you'd be super sensitive to it. Now, is there a way that developers signal their availability, Alexandra? I mean, is there some of the responsibility need to go onto the candidate a little bit to say, okay, you need to tell very clearly what your status is. Otherwise, you know, you can anticipate these messages coming at you. Is that fair, or do you think that's no?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair, actually. And I have to say, I have been guilty of not updating my LinkedIn profile or not mentioning whether I was interested or not. Simply because, yeah, I think someone already mentioned in the chat at one point, when you're busy all the time, right, you don't work as a recruiter, so you're not on LinkedIn all the time and you forget to update these things. But I think it's fair. And also us as developers, I think we do complain a lot about things like messages and being sort of overloaded with these things. But it's also up to us to do something about it and just update our statuses.
Yeah, and what do you think of the great that you're back with us, Mingho. What do you think of the idea of like putting something on your LinkedIn? Because I've seen that a lot. Alan mentioned, hey, there's a bunch of developers that sometimes say, don't contact me, I'm not looking for work. Do you think that is something that developers should do, or is it sort of too public? Because if you take it off suddenly and you don't necessarily want your boss to know, then you know suddenly you've got you personally, you might be exposing yourself a little bit, aren't you? So we've got that challenge to deal with as well. I don't even know whether I asked the question there or not, which is okay, because we've got 9 questions that have been asked in the Ask a Question section, and we better get to them because we're already over time. So Alexandra and Mingho, you're going to help us answer these questions, okay? I don't even know what's been asked, so this is a little bit risky, but I hope this is going to be fine. Okay, so we have one from Stefania, and Stefania is saying, would engineers prefer to have the job description in the outreach message, yes or no? So we're talking first contact, right? At some point, you're going to see the job description. But is it too much to send it on first email, yes or no? Let's go to you with this first, Mingho.
For me, I think that's great. But I would like it to be a summary instead of a copy-paste, just a link. Because if there's a summary for like what kind of person they're looking for and the requirements, then it's really clear if I'm a good fit or not, then I can decide what to respond very quick in a short time.
Yeah. That's great, Mingho. Basically, the answer is kind of in the sense that don't force the click, like don't send them elsewhere. Don't say, hey, check out the link. That's too much effort. Put enough email in line, put enough content in line so the person can glance at it. And then basically in that 2-3 second glance, figure out whether it's a yay or nay. And then you can send more information afterward. Definitely don't send a big attachment with, you know, whatever. Anything that asks another click, that's not happening. Okay, we're going to have to alternate these answers, you two, because time is short. Hope that's okay. We're going to go with a question from Martin Poole. Martin's asked, how open are these guys to LinkedIn? So these guys meaning developers, I guess. How open are these guys? There's some addressing of the language there, Martin. To LinkedIn connection requests from a recruiter with no message attached. So this is about, hey, you've got a cold connect, no message. Better or not, Alexandra?
It's an interesting question because you have to wonder, right? Why is this person connecting with me? I mean, if it has absolutely no messaging, no context, nothing, it might seem a little bit random. Of course, you are expecting that they will at one point contact you if they're a recruiter. But still, I have to say, I have not been consistent about this in my career. Like sometimes I'm just open to it. Maybe it also depends on timing, if I'm looking for a job at that moment. Or for instance, when I was a more junior developer, I was definitely more open to it. Sometimes I would be open to it. At other times, it might seem a little random and I will not accept.
a really important point, Alexandra. Recruiters often forget this because recruiters flick on LinkedIn all the time. It's a default app that's always there. Therefore, we develop habits. We develop effectively best practice, even though we don't necessarily document it. But we think, yeah, we don't ever do this because you've habituated yourself to do it. But don't forget, folks, normal human beings, like the civilians out there, don't use LinkedIn. They only use LinkedIn when they're looking for work or potentially there's a professional reason to do it, in which case you can't expect necessarily habituation to have occurred because it's so episodic when they're using this software. Very interesting point. So to Martin's point, it's like maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the most efficient thing is go cold and have no message because you don't have to type anything. Okay, we're going to keep going. I'm going to flick over to Mingho with this one, okay? This is from Andrea Lunguescu, who's asked, what is a healthy dose of background research before you go to stalking mode? So how much is too much? Mingho, you want to give this a shot? I don't think she can hear me. Have I gone mute?
No.
Nope.
Mingho, you're on mute.
Mingho, you're on mute there. I think we're getting difficulties there. Okay, no worries. See if you can get back on. Andrea, do you want to give this a shot? We're talking about background research. How much is too much?
Sorry. Sure. I think by background research, what I would normally expect is enough information to sort of just tell me why I would be fit for that job. Of course, there shouldn't be anything really personal, but more professional research, because it's important for me to understand why me, what is it that the company is looking for, and
Are you saying anything personal would go into the stalker mode?
No, not anything personal. And I can definitely appreciate a little bit of humor or something like that. But there's a fine line, right? So I can't tell you where the line is, but I know it when I see it.
We want to know where the line is, so we don't go into this mode. At least Andrea needs to know where this line is, because I think she's probably being accused of being a stalker.
Unfortunately, I only know it when I see it.
Go on, Mingho.
Yeah, I would say a research on my CV would be good. Like, it's enough, like on LinkedIn. But for me, the most important part is the research before, and the research not only for our profiles, but also for the industry and also for the skills. Like I mentioned, I also answered it. Because that's important, really important, that make me feel you're not just shooting in the dark.
Yeah.
I want to know why me? Yeah, like Alexander mentioned. Yeah,
that's a very consistent pattern, Mingho. So I do think, and by the way, both of these developers have said generally the research needs to be a circulating around the professional aspect. But maybe you could throw in a bit of personal, but it's got to be small. You can't just talk about the history of this person's non-professional life. That would certainly be stalker mode. Okay, Andrew, I hope that's answered the question. Okay, we're going to just have to fly through this. Question, is it recorded? Of course it's recorded. Question from LinkedIn. This is from Robert Holstock. Hi, Robert. Robert's saying, great content here, but what are the methods you use for gathering emails for devs? So I think this one's really for Allah. We'll have to deal with that at a different time. Loads of ways to gather emails from people. Emails generally is public information. So we'll follow up on that, Robert, and there's other ways to figure this out. Okay, moving on. Right, here's a good one from Ian Benjamin. Video outreach, right? So we're talking so far about messaging, and we're generally talking about text. What do you feel about someone sending you a video? Do you respond to it? Is it something you're happy with? Is it a development we're going to see more of? Thoughts on this? Let's get both of your views. Go to you first, Mingho, with this.
I'm quite interesting. Like, I'm quite interested about what kind of video is that? Because I've never got one before.
Okay. You can do it on LinkedIn now. It's like LinkedIn are trying to push it, right? So you can actually get your phone and send a recorded video. It's basically like a selfie, but you record a 30-second, 60-second video, and boom, it's there. But it seems not common. Well, at least you've not received this, Mingho. What are your thoughts generally? Would you be comfortable with it, or do you think it's a bit weird?
Yeah.
I think it depends, because I would say probably I'm more like an ambivert person. So sometimes to record a video of the person face to face, that is a little bit awkward for me. So I like to like talk to the real person more. So that's probably for me a little bit awkward. Yeah.
I think we got it there, a little bit strange. But I also think it's inevitably strange because it's quite new. And maybe it takes an adoption phase before that's okay. By the way, I send a lot of video. So I'm one of these people that does this. Not to developers, to my mom generally. Alex, that's true. I don't want to speak to her in person, you know, like synchronized conversation. Parents, don't do that. We have to move on real quick because we're out of time. A question for Valeria Colombo. She's asked for Ala as well. Sorry, we're gonna have to deal with that another time. More from Ala. Okay, too much from Ala there. Let's keep going. Okay, that's it. All of them were
Hung, I have a quick question. I was curious if adding salary information makes a difference when reaching out.
For me, I think any sort of the more transparency, the better from my side. So it's not necessarily about salary, but salary is just one of these details, right? Because if I get a very vague message as in, oh, yeah, great company, wonderful salary and no details at all, then right. I will immediately be sort of put off by that.
Yeah, for me, it would be a plus. Yeah.
Yeah, a plus, but I don't think it's necessarily a rule out because it's one of those strange ones on first contact. I think you need to be prepared to disclose it. Like you can't just say, oh, it's going to be market rate. Or you can't say, hey, you know, we'll figure it out after your test. No. But maybe I think first contact may be too early because you're presuming the person is job seeking. So let's establish the person might have an interest and then you can start talking about, you know, the money side of it. Cool. Listen. This has been an awesome show. We could keep talking, but we're well over time and I don't want to like draw any more time. And by the way, there's other people I was meant to bring on and I failed to do that. So Sasha, I'm really sorry. And Simon, I'm really sorry as well. We're going to try and do this again soon. Good news is we have round two next Friday. So the second part of this series from the developer's point of view is happening next week. So we're going to keep on talking to these great people, developers, and also people that have tried to recruit developers and get a bit more flavor on it. The next stage is going to be how recruiters review developer profiles. Now, how do we make assessments at early first pass? And I think this will be useful because it'll be education, I think, for the developer side. So you understand the psychology behind why this person is doing this. But also, you can challenge it to say, actually, this is, you know, you're over-indexing on this aspect and you're missing this aspect. So it should be a very interesting show. Make sure you follow the channel. That's the best way to keep in touch with these shows, by the way, folks. You can register for every single one if you want to do it in a manual way. But follow the channel. You'll get the update and you'll be able to log in. Anyway, that's about it. Mingho, Alexandria, thank you so much for your time. Really great to have you on the show. If you can come back next week, we'll definitely love to get you back. Have a good weekend in any case. Ilya, I just want to say thank you for getting up, man. I mean, I totally appreciate this. I hope you – I know. This is amazing. I'm really –
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I loved it, actually. I had a lot of points where I wanted to jump in and add comments. So I just kind of held back and there was so much great content.
I want you to do that, Ilya, because I think you've got so much to add from, as I say, the perspective of connecting with so many developers. And you know, this is something that is almost like a third perspective because you have the developers on one side receiving the information. You have recruiters like Ala doing the communication, but few of us are like building this like mega community. Like how many developers are in VanHack right now?
I can give you the exact number. We have a live update. If anyone goes to vanhack.com/talent, they can actually see the number live there as well. 193,426 as of right now, and we're growing about 500 a week, 500 to 1,000 a week.
Can you share the link to that in the chat stream? I think that's the race. People should check this out.
It's our entire talent pool. So and we always get this question of, hey, like, you know, we're a recruiting platform, right? So kind of, I guess you could put us in the agency bucket, although we see ourselves as a lot more than just an agency. We always get this question of, hey, send me some blank resumes. I'll see if your candidates are worth it. And we just thought, you know what, why don't we just build a blank version of our entire talent pool? So companies can go in and search senior TypeScript engineer with X years experience in fluent English and see exactly how many people we have, as well as videos of those candidates introducing themselves. So it's just something cool.
You can anonymize that, which is fantastic. And by the way, Ilya, I do want to speak to you about the global impact of future of tech hiring as well, because one of the things that you guys started off with was moving talent around, obviously providing the liquidity to help people make relocates. I also want to talk about what the impact on remote is. Does it actually improve so there's going to be you and me talking about a bit of this as well, man. Okay, that's about it. I've just shared Ilya's LinkedIn on there. If you want to chat to Ilya about VanHack or anything else, do connect with him there. I'm going to email everyone with a follow-up now anyway, but that's about it for this show. We're going to be there back next week. Ilya, you're going to get up again, I think. If you're up for it, we'll get you back and we'll get the developer team and maybe some other developers as well. I hope you've enjoyed it, everybody. If you did, give us a comment, give us a like, give us whatever, and follow the channel, as I mentioned, for updates on the show. Okay, that's it. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Hope that was okay, everybody. I really enjoyed that show. And it reminded me, actually, that I really should like mix up the format a little bit. I mean, I know I'm a little bit, let's stick to formula. But sometimes having to shuffle the deck a little bit, it's a bit better. For the people that ask questions for Allah, by the way, sorry I couldn't get to them, but I've shared Allah's LinkedIn into the chat stream, and I'll email everyone on Crowdcast as well with everybody's details. And please connect with Allah and have a chat with her there. I'm sure she'd be happy to answer your question. All right, that's it. I think I'm going to have a bath.